Tip FM's Tip Today with Fran Curry.
In association with Slattery's of Pecan, Tipperary's main Peugeot dealer. Slattery's Garage Pecan, the name you can trust for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.
Now, this month's Hidden Histories, Connor takes us on a journey to meet one of the most famous criminal families in 19th century Australia. Their exploits are the stuff of legend, and their most prolific son went on to be compared to a modern-day Robin Hood. Now, in what is a wonderful twist of fate that is almost lost to history, their story began in a courtroom in Cashel in January of 1841.
The story that I'm about to share in this month's Tipperary's Hidden History has already been well told. It has been documented in books, on television and film, and across the annals of Irish and modern Australian history. The person I will document in this episode rose through the ranks to become one of the most feared highwaymen, or as they were known in Australia, bushrangers, of the 19th century. His contributions to history and folklore, to criminology and culture, have created a legacy that has endured across two continents during the past 150 years. In a fascinating truth for the people of Tipperary, this whole episode and its historical consequences would never have happened were it not for the developments in a courtroom in Cashel in January 1841. This month, and for the first time ever on Tipperary's Hidden History, we tackle the remarkable story of Ned Kelly. Ned's father was born in Tipperary in 1820 and sentenced in 1841 to 7 years transportation for stealing two pigs. He arrived in Van Diemen's Land in 1842. When his sentence expired in 1848, he went to the Port Phillip district, where on the 18th of November 1850 he married Ellen, the 18-year-old daughter of James and Mary Quinn. Ellen Kelly was born in Antrim, the fourth of 11 children of James Quinn and his wife Mary. Ellen had an adventurous spirit that rebelled against any confinement and led her to often play truant from school and roam the countryside, a practice that left her able to read but not to write and to develop a lifelong affinity for horses and the land. The Quinns, then numbering 10, reached Port Phillip as assisted migrants in July 1841. After a period of menial work in Melbourne, James Quinn took the family north to rented farmland at Brunswick, and then in 1849 a further 30 miles to Wallen. Lively and slim, with black hair and grey eyes, and an expert horsewoman, Ellen caught the eye of 30-year-old John Red Kelly. Defying her father, Ellen took up with Red and fell pregnant in May 1850. They married on the 18th of November at St. Francis Catholic Church in Melbourne, and moved into their cottage on the Quinn's Wallen property. The couple had 5 daughters and 3 sons. Edward, Ned Kelly, was born in 1854 or 1855 at Beveridge in Victoria. Ned attended school at Avenel until his father died on the 27th of December 1866. Left indigent, the widow and children moved to a hut at 11 Mile Creek, about halfway between Greta and Glenrowan in northern Victoria, where James Quinn had taken up a cattle run of 25,000 acres of poor country in 1862. Well known in the district, the Quinns and 2 Lloyd brothers who had married into the family were suspected by the police in connection with the theft of horses and cattle. In 1869, Ned was arrested for alleged assault on a Chinaman and held for 10 days on remand, but the charge was dismissed. Next year, he was arrested and held in custody for 7 weeks as a suspected accomplice of the bushranger Harry Power, but again, the charge was dismissed. In 1870, Ned Kelly was convicted of summary offences and imprisoned for 6 months. Soon after his release, he was sentenced to 3 years imprisonment for receiving a mare, knowing it to have been stolen. In 1874, he was discharged from prison and his mother married George King. Kelly worked for 2 years at timber getting, but in 1876 joined his stepfather in stealing horses. The Kelly family saw themselves as victims of police persecution. Still, as they grew up, the boys were probably privy to the organised thefts of horses and cattle for which the district was notorious. Ned's younger brother, James, was sentenced to 5 years imprisonment for cattle stealing in 1873. He was released in 1877 and he went to Wagga Wagga, where he was sentenced to 10 years imprisonment for stealing horses. He lived respectably after his release from jail and died in 1946. His mother, always known as Mrs. Kelly, despite her second marriage, died in 1923. The third brother, Dan, had been sentenced to 3 months imprisonment in 1877 for damaging property. And soon after his release in 1878, a warrant was issued for his arrest for stealing horses. On the 15th of April, a police trooper named Fitzpatrick went to Mrs. Kelly's home, allegedly to arrest Dan. Fitzpatrick claimed that Ned shot him. Ned consistently denied that he was present, but three policemen later testified that he had confessed to them. The facts have never been established. Dan went into hiding. Mrs. Kelly, her son-in-law William Skillion, and a neighbour, William Williamson, were arrested and charged with aiding and abetting the attempted murder of Fitzpatrick. In October, they were tried at Beechworth and convicted. The judge, Sir Redmond Barry, sentenced her to imprisonment for 3 years and the two males for six. Rewards of £100 were offered for the apprehension of Ned and Dan Kelly, who went into hiding in the Wombat Ranges near Mansfield. They were joined by Joe Byrne and Steve Hart. Soon afterwards, Sergeant Kennedy and Constables Lanigan, Scanlon and McIntyre set out to capture Ned and Dan Kelly, and on the 25th of October camped at Stringybark Creek, where they were seen by Ned. The next day, Kennedy and Scanlon went out on patrol, leaving Lanigan and McIntyre at the camp. The Kelly gang surprised the camp, and when Lanigan drew his revolver, Ned shot him dead. McIntyre surrendered. When Kennedy and Scanlon returned, they did not surrender when called on, and in an exchange of shots, Ned killed Scanlon and mortally wounded Kennedy. Ned later shot him in the heart, claiming it was an act of mercy. McIntyre escaped to Mansfield and reported the killings. On the 15th of November, the Victorian government proclaimed outlawry and offered rewards of £500 each for the gang, alive or dead. Police were mobilised, but their methods of pursuit were crude and inept. On the 9th of December, the Kelly gang took possession of a sheep station at Faithful's Creek, about 4 miles out of Aurora, locking up 22 persons in a storeroom. While Byrne guarded the captives, the other three went to Aurora and held up the National Bank, taking £2,000 in notes and gold. This crime resulted in a doubling of the reward. But on Saturday, the 8th of February, 1879, the gang struck again, this time at Geraldry, a town about 30 miles north of the Murray River. They locked up two policemen and took possession of the police station, remaining there until Monday morning. Wearing police uniforms, they held up the Bank of New South Wales for £2,141 in notes and coin and rounded up 60 persons at the Royal Hotel next door. Ned had given a written statement of over 8,000 words to a bank teller. What became of the original and of an earlier statement Ned had sent to Donald Cameron, MLA, is not known. But long after Kelly's death, copies made by a clerk in the Crown Law Department became available. Known as the Cameron Letter and the Geraldry Letter, they're Kelly's explanation and justification of his conduct. The reward for the outlaws was increased to £2,000 a head, and native trackers were brought in from Queensland. Aaron Sherritt, a friend of Joe Byrne's, became an agent for the police, and on Saturday the 27th of June 1880 was shot dead by Byrne in his own doorway near Beechworth, while the four constables assigned to guard Sherritt hid in a bedroom. Byrne and Dan then joined Ned and Hart at Glenrowan, where they took possession of the hotel run by Mrs. Anne Jones and detained about 60 people. The outlaws foresaw a special train that would be sent from Melbourne on Sunday night and would arrive at Glenrowan early on Monday the 29th of June, and intending to wreck it, they compelled two railway workers to tear up some of the rails. The scheme came to nothing because a schoolmaster, Thomas Curnow, whom Ned had allowed to leave the hotel with his wife, child and sister, gave a warning to the train crew. The other outlaws were equipped with armour made from plough mould boards, and Ned was protected by a cylindrical headpiece, breast and back plates, and an apron weighing about 90 pounds. This was an outfit that would later become culturally iconic in Australia. Little sleep and much alcohol affected their judgment, and although the armour limited their movements and use of firearms, it gave them a false sense of invulnerability. Under Superintendent Hare, the police approached the hotel, and the shooting began. Hare was shot in the arm and Ned wounded in the foot, hand and arm. Dan, Byrne and Hart took refuge in the hotel and Ned went into the bush. The police continued to fire. Byrne was shot in the thigh as he stood at the hotel bar and bled to death. About 5 a.m, Ned returned, still clad in armour, looking huge and grotesque in the early mist. He was brought down by a bullet wound in the legs. Most of the captives in the hotel had succeeded in leaving the building, the last of them emerging about 10 a.m. An old man named Cherry was in a detached kitchen, fatally wounded by a police bullet. Young John Jones, son of the hotel keeper, was similarly shot in the abdomen and died in hospital. With Ned captured and Byrne dead, only Dan and Hart were not accounted for. But the police continued to fire sporadically until 3 p.m. when a policeman set the building on fire. Father Matthew Gibney went into the burning building to administer the last rites and reported three dead bodies were inside. One, Burns, was brought out by the police. The other two were those of Dan and Hart, who had taken poison and were burned beyond recognition. On the 28th and 29th of October 1880 at Melbourne, Ned Kelly was tried for the murder of Constable Thomas Lonergan at Stringybar Creek. He was found guilty and the judge, Redmond Barry, sentenced him to death. Immediately after his trial and sentencing, 30,000 people in Melbourne signed a petition begging the governor for a reprieve. But alas, none was forthcoming. Despite this agitation, Kelly was hanged at Melbourne Jail on the 11th of November. He met his end without fear. His last words were, "Ah well, I suppose it has come to this," later rendered by a journalist as, "Such is life." After Ned Kelly's execution, bushranger plays were banned for fear of public unrest. According to the Australian literary scholar Paul Eggert, and I quote, "This delayed the public myth-making around Kelly until the appearance of Kelly Gang plays from 1897, unquote. The Australian politician Henry Turner described Ned Kelly as, and I quote, "a shabby skulker," but observed, "It was a humiliating reflection that the whole machinery of government, the apparent zeal of a well-disciplined and costly police service, the stimulus of enormous rewards, and an expenditure of fully £100,000 were, for two whole years, insufficient to check the predatory career of these four reckless daredevil boys," unquote. Besides Ned, his three companions are shadowy figures and would have soon been forgotten without him. Writing in the Bulletin on the 31st of December 1966, Australian journalist Malcolm Ellis described Ned Kelly as, and I quote, "one of the most cold-blooded, egotistical and utterly self-centred criminals who ever decorated the end of a rope in an Australian jail," unquote. However deplorable, the popular estimate of Kelly's killings of the police at Stringybar Creek accords with his statement, "I could not help shooting them, or else they would have shot me," which they would have done if their bullets had been directed as they intended, unquote. While elements of farce surrounding the bank robberies at Eurora and Gerildery distract attention from the gravity of the crimes, the Tasmanian writer Clive Turnbull claims that, and I quote, "Ned Kelly is the best known Australian, our only folk hero. Popular instincts have found in Kelly a type of manliness, much to be esteemed, courage, resolution, independence, sympathy with the underdog," unquote. And what about that court proceeding in Cashel in 1841 that gave rise to this wonderful but deadly Australian history and folklore? In December 1840, John Red Kelly, the patriarch of the family, stole two pigs from James Cooney near Cashel. He appeared in court the following month, where he was found guilty and sentenced to 7 years' transportation. Kelly, as they say, had form when it came to animal theft, but this was not his first rodeo. John Red Kelly was born in Moyglass, Killinall, on February 20th, 1820. Just because he was an animal thief, we shouldn't assume that John was an evil or natural career criminal. In contrast, he was born in an Ireland deprived under the yoke of British rule. The rural peasantry lived hand to mouth, and as we've seen many times, some of these severely punished crimes were often necessary merely to ensure the survival of the perpetrator and their family. Had John Red Kelly not been convicted and transported, would he have produced such an interesting and criminally prolific family? I'm afraid that hypothetical question must remain part of Tipperary's and Australia's hidden history.
Love it. Dr. Conor Reedy there with the latest episode of Tipperary's Hidden Histories. I want to play that for my lovely aunt Rosari, who is mad about Conor Reedy and she loves the Hidden Histories. I'm quite jealous, Rosari, I really am. By the way, if you want to listen back to previous editions of Hidden Histories, it's Tipperary's Hidden History, all one word, .com. So it's all the W's and it's Tipperary's Hidden History, .com. And it is a treasure trove of wonderful pieces there from Conor over many, many years now indeed. I was reading today that you couldn't make it up, you know. A bachelor, he's attempting to sue 50 women after they started a Facebook group to warn others about him being a bad date. Stuart Lucas Murray. He had complained about his treatment in the viral group called Are We Dating the Same Guy, in which women made unflattering comments about him. And seemingly the story is that these posts left him suffering from emotional distress, PTSD and mortification, according to his complaint. And he's seeking, wait for it, $2.6 million, okay, dollars that is, and that's, what is it, about 2.4 million euro in compensation and in punitive damages as well. He's a Yale educated academic and it's his first case, but it's interesting, isn't it? So he's taking on 50 women and he's trying to get 2.4 million euro from them because he figures that he was he was spoken badly of indeed in terms of being a bad date. Interesting one. We'll take a break back in just a moment.
Tip Today with Fran Curry.
With Slattery's Garage, puck on. You can't beat experience. With over 50 years maintaining Peugeot cars and vans, we like to call ourselves the experts. Call Slattery's Garage for a free vehicle health check today. 067 24111 or slatterysgarage.ie.